and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and welcome to my show tonight. Tonight I have with us Cynthia Sue Larson, and we're going to talk about her new book, Reality Shifts, When Consciousness Changes the Physical World. That can mean many things, Cynthia Sue. Welcome to my show tonight. Before we get started, would you tell us a little bit about you, where to find you, what you do, and where you are, and how you came to do what you do?
Oh, that'll be quick and easy and fun. Make it short. Yeah. Well, the best way to find me is through my website, realityshifters.com, and that website's been there for, 13 years now, going on 14, and it's all about the subject of reality shifts, so that's why I'm so excited about this book that came out. My background is that I studied physics at UC Berkeley a number of years ago, and when I started witnessing what I refer to as reality shifts, where things appear, disappear, transform, and transport, as well as changes in the experience of time. This is back when the internet was like brand new. I think it was still the ARPANET, and I was doing searches through the university computer system trying to find out what else is known about these things, because I'm actually literally watching people and cars and buildings just vanish before my eyes. And I know I'm not doing drugs. I know there's something going on here, and it must be related to the wish that I had at the time to know the true nature of the universe, coupled with the fact that I went through a Kundalini awakening experience. So that's the whole thing in a nutshell. But then, of course, I need to explain more. What do I mean, Kundalini awakening?
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask you. And I was going to ask, what main things are disappearing in front of your eyes?
Right. Well, okay. Well, the kind of things that I first started noticing, some of the very first reality shifts, I would dismiss them like a lot of people would. I'd be doing laundry, for example, and I'd be... It's just a very mundane activity, such as running a load of wash through the washing machine, move it to the dryer, and then come to find out there the whole bunch of things are missing, like socks, for example. Now, I'm not the first one that's noticed this, and I have actually taken the machines apart to see what's going on, and is the machine eating them? No, it's not. So actually, socks are actually vanishing, literally vanishing. So that was interesting, but I disregarded it. It took something much bigger. For example, the appearance of a sundial sculpture at the Berkeley Marina, which was made of concrete. It's about, 15 feet high and about as far as wide across, made of solid concrete and with a plaque saying that it was dedicated by the sister city in Japan to the city of Berkeley. This thing was monstrously huge. What's interesting is it had never been there at the Berkeley Marina for a number of times that I'd gone to brunch and gone on walks with a couple of my best friends. We would just routinely meet there, have brunch at the marina, go for a walk, and none of us remembered having seen that there before. So that is the kind of thing I'm talking about, where something just suddenly appears, looking like it's been there for a long time, looking very weather-worn. And I did contact the harbor master at the Berkeley Marina and asked him, how long has this thing been here? And as usual for these types of reality shifts, in his experience, that sundial sculpture literally had been there for as long as the plaque said that it had been there, which I can't remember now, but it went back to like the 1970s or something. So obviously it was not just a brand new feature that was installed recently, but instead had been there for a long time. And so,
I had an amazing thing like that happen one time. It was when all the things were happening to my daughter, and I couldn't believe that they were happening, and I was asking the universe for some proof. So one day, I gave it specific things. I wanted some absolute proof of which direction to take. And I lived in Atlanta, and I was driving from Dunwoody to downtown Atlanta. I did it every single day. And right there beside this exit where I got off, there was this big yellow sign, like those vodka signs that say absolute.
Yeah.
It didn't say absolute. It said absolutely. And that's exactly what I'd said. I said, I want you to, I was talking to the universe. I'm kind of crazy. I said, I want you to tell me absolutely what to do. And so I was driving down the road, and I saw this big yellow sign with black letters, and it said, absolutely. And I had been kind of tuned myself to be listening for somebody to go, absolutely, on the radio or something like that. When I left that day, work where I was going, and came back, that sign was gone. So, I mean, I'm talking about a big giant outdoor board.
Yeah.
Right beside the main highway in Atlanta. Now, where did it go? But I'd never thought about somebody else having those things, so I'm so glad to hear it.
Yeah, and these are the sorts of things I describe in my book, Reality Shifts. What I've noticed is that when people hear these stories, like when they listen to your show tonight, what can happen is for a lot of people who've never had these sorts of things happen before, just the fact that they're opening their minds to the possibility that they could observe reality shifts, in fact, allows this experience to be welcomed into their lives. And you may wonder, like, well, how come people don't have these things regularly? And I just mentioned some cases where they do, with the socks and the laundry, for example. We often do see these things, but we just don't give it any thought because we take a second look and we think, well, I must be imagining things. If you see a building that wasn't there before, that can't be right. That can't be a building that wasn't there before. And sometimes some people do literally see an entire building that's never been there, but now it is.
Your background to make sure people...
My background is I do have a physics degree from UC Berkeley. And when I was studying physics at UC Berkeley, my favorite part of physics was quantum physics. Now, this was back in the 1980s, and quantum physics was relatively new on the scene. That meant that Professor John Clark, who is one of my favorites, and he's been in the running for the Nobel Prize number of times, he's still at UC Berkeley. He was teaching quantum physics. He's a fantastic professor. So if anybody's interested in studying...
What was his name?
John Clark.
Okay.
Wonderful gentleman. And he talked about quantum physics in the way that any professor would, which would be ascribing most of the phenomenon that you would witness on the quantum scale to be observable on the quantum scale. Now, the premise that I'm putting forward with my book, Reality Shifts, is that actually we can't really separate the quantum scale from the rest of reality. I mean, it's very nice that we like to do that. And, you know, for the purposes of a physics class, when we're studying something like gravity or we're looking at the forces involved on an inclined plane, we might assume, just for the sake of solving the problem, that there's no friction, just to make it simple. Or we might work with a two-body problem instead of a three- or four-body, because the multi-body problems are harder. But the truth is, in the real world, we do have friction on our surfaces, and we do have multi-body problems. And quantum effects actually do appear in the regular macro-scale reality that we observe. We would expect that they would do that sometimes, and in fact, we are seeing signs of what Albert Einstein referred to as spooky action at a distance with quantum entanglement, for example, where we've got things that move in synchrony. And I describe some of that in the book Reality Shift as well. Yeah, go ahead.
When someone sees something that, like you saw that statue that wasn't there or whatever it was, and then it was there, and I understand that there's no matter on the quantum level, that there's only energy. So there are parallel universes going on at all the time. Whose reality shifted, yours or the people around you?
That's a really good question.
That makes sense.
My favorite kind of reality shift is where I've got witnesses that observe it also. I have observed both kinds, where I'm the only observer, and then I feel like I'm a crazy person because I will be telling people, don't you remember that this, the business hours at this facility used to be open all night, and now it says 9 o'clock to 9 o'clock again, and they close the gate. You know, I routinely see one particular business that goes back and forth between open 24 hours, and then every now and then, nope, they close things down. They're just open 9 to 9.
What would happen if you did like the double split experiment and took a picture?
Well, what happens, good question. What happened, and I have done, I mean, it's like a pop quiz, and you never know when this reality shift is going to occur. At least I don't. Seems like they happen when they want to happen. Like the sign that you mentioned, the absolutely. And you know you saw that it said absolutely, that you weren't hallucinating. Then you come back and the sign is gone. Now, if you had taken a picture of that absolutely, chances are, in all the experiences that I've so far noticed, the photo would not be there. So if you took a picture of it, the photo would be gone along with the reality in which the sign existed. Because I've actually taken photos that have shown up in, like, back when they used to get rolls of prints. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but you'd go to the drugstore or whatever and get your pictures back with the negatives and the prints. And I actually got back pictures that I looked at that were in there, and then I shut the little packet of photos, came back later, and the photos were different. And so sometimes when the reality shift occurs, then the evidence is gone too, which can be extremely frustrating.
What if you took it with one of the new digital cameras? Would it be there or not?
So far, in my experience, I've not yet seen a case where any evidence travels into what you might call the parallel universe. So,
and what does that mean to the general listener?
It means that consciousness is the supreme reality, and the only trace we have of anything that did change is our own memory of it. Many of the ancients in the world of meditation and consciousness would tell us, they would say that there are only three things to track. One would be time, one is space, and one is knowledge. Now, time and space, physicists will tell us, is a fabric. So then if you've got your fabric of time, of space-time, then the only other variable is knowledge, which you could call consciousness, and that would be the supreme reality. So when we have a different memory, we're the ones that are tuning in these other radio stations. It's as if each reality is its own channel, and you can kind of fine-tune them with our own minds, which is much, I don't mean our brain by this, I mean our mind, where you can kind of lock into a vibrational frequency or something that you need to access and get that reality.
Well, that's a very good thing to talk about before we go further about your book, is to define two things. What is consciousness to you? What is that thing? What is your definition of it as you use it in this book, or do you use it in various ways in this book? And number two, what is the difference between brain and mind?
Right,
so
those are
all on the same page.
Yeah, those are good questions. Well, in the book Reality Shifts, what I'm talking about when I talk about consciousness, I really do mean it as two different things. One, I get to toward the end of the book, the other one is more what people tend to think of with their state of consciousness. Like, are they alert and aware? Are they in an alpha or a beta brainwave state of mind? I go through Ken Wilber's states of consciousness where he talks about levels of awareness, and that is it's another way of looking at it so that we can view the world through just increasing higher vibrational viewpoints that you could think of as more evolved, but they're just levels of consciousness, and they're available to all of us, really. And those levels of consciousness start with just a basic awareness of the way things are and move up through levels. The point is that there are variable levels involved. This other kind of consciousness that's not the level one is more what I get to at the end of the book, Reality Shifts, where I talk about being aware of everything as being lucid. And there's an idea within lucid dreaming that you're awake within the dream. And what I'm getting at is that there's a possibility for us humans to be aware that we're awake even in this, in other words, that we're dreaming even in this real life, so that we can wake up within our lives as well as wake up within our dream. And that would be awakening to a sense of what you might call oneness, an awareness that everything is connected. And
Sorry, I was so focused on what you were saying. I was expecting more stuff to come.
Well, there's a lot to it. I mean, there are lots of ways to slice it up. And I didn't get to brain and mind, but But that's also, because you asked a lot of questions all in one big piece there. The
well,
brain
talk about,
mind,
yeah. Do you have anything else you want to say about that before we go?
Are we at a break point, or should I save it?
No, we don't have on this show.
Okay. Well, yeah, the brain and the mind, that's very interesting. And that's a good distinction, because what I like to describe the difference as being, and I get to it a little bit in the book Reality Shifts, is that the brain is actually an organ. It's just part of our body, and it's something that we can use to think with. You know, we tend to think that we think with the brain, that that's what it's for. But our mind is something that's beyond the brain, and it's something that is it's a bigger thing. So the mind is much more than can possibly fit into the brain, yet we use the brain as a tool. And in my book, Reality Shift, what I really get into is our belief structures, the way that we construct reality. We do that with our brain to some degree, but then we interpret what we witness. You know, the brain is like a filter that shows us what the reality around us is all about. And I mentioned in my book, Reality Shifts, Dr. Carl Prebram's research. He's a neuroscientist that was with Stanford University. His proposal was that brains perform computations that construct physical reality. And he had a holographic model of the brain, suggesting that we're viewing only a very limited version of reality that we're capable of understanding. So there's much more out there in the world than we're ever able to really put our minds around. But our minds are much bigger than the brain itself, which is that filtering kind of a tool.
So when we talk about mind, is there more than one mind? I mean, does everybody have the same mind? Is there a big mind and a little mind? And I could get, you know, you and I have been friends for a long time, and the last interview that we had on your book was different from this one, and this one I'm, like, captivated because you're telling me things that I haven't heard before and that I'm interested in. So sorry if I'm getting off topic here.
No, that's great.
Is there a difference between big mind and little mind? Does everybody have the same mind?
Well, in the book Reality Shifts, I do mention the work of Ken Wilber, where he talks about these 10 basic structures of consciousness, which describe the hierarchical development of human consciousness and mind. It's all about mind. So it's not the brain, it's the mind. And it starts off very undifferentiated, which is sort of a primary matrix. You might think of it as adualistic or oceanic or protoplasmic, that kind of thing. I like to think of it as the consciousness of a photon, actually. And I don't actually describe it that way in the book, but that's what I really relate to. It's like, what if a photon, a quantum particle, could think? It would be very much in that framework of let there be light. That would be kind of, it wouldn't even be thinking the words. It would just be doing, being that very primary kind of a consciousness. It moves up from that level. That's the first level. Second level is, Ken Wilber has named it, sensory physical mind. The physiological beginning. This is where whatever it is has a sense of self and differentiation. So a human being would think of themselves as being separate from their mother or separate from others around them. So it's a hatching or a birth of the physical self.
What does a dog or a chicken think?
Yeah, so, the funny thing is they've done studies with little ducklings that they hatch, and then the first thing they see is what they think of is their mother. So, but they know they're different, and they just have that built-in sense, I've got to follow whoever I'm with because I'm safe with mom. So it's really cute, like a baby duckling would follow along after a dog if that's the first thing it sees and there's no mother duck. So I don't know what it's thinking, but it's just aware that I'm different and I need to be safe, so sticking along with another one. So it's a step up from that photon, from that undifferentiated mind of just being everything.
Do they get unhappy? Or are they just...
Well, these lower levels of consciousness, each one has its own feeling to it. You can do meditations, as I have, on each of these levels of mind, and I'll notice that it's more like playing piano keys. Like when I ask myself and I give myself a quiz, like what levels of consciousness am I using right now? I've noticed I was at levels 1, 6, and 8 simultaneously on a whole bunch of occasions. very much in that trance state of one, you know, like the photon. And then also at the same time, in what Ken Wilber calls formal reflexive mind, very world-centric and introspective of a, with a global perspective, thinking about thinking and questioning the questions. I love that level. Mm-hmm. And then psychic, which is nature mysticism, feeling like you are the mountain while knowing that you're separate and that you have your own boundaries. Those are 1, 6, and 8. And I that's like a combination that I frequently meditate in, levels 1, 6, and 8. So it's, to me, it's like a piano chord, like you'd hit three notes on a piano, and you could be thinking with or in a mindful state at three levels of consciousness very simultaneously. I think those three in particular are pretty good for manifesting, but I think the strongest one of all is when you get to the what Ken Wilber calls the causal level, which is the very top point on his chart of mindfulness. And the causal mind is formless mysticism. It's like dreamless sleep with a sensation of utter fullness, way beyond objectification. It's kind of like it's right at the essence of pure nothingness and non-duality, almost like the dragon biting its tail. So you're almost back to undifferentiated mind. But when it says causal, boy, does it mean it, because whatever you think, it comes right into reality. Very high energy state of consciousness, and there's high power there. So it's the kind of thing people might think, oh, I'd love to do that. But actually, it's probably a good thing most of us aren't in that level all the time in case we get upset with someone. You know, a lot of the things that run through our minds are not necessarily beneficial for everybody. And I think
that phrase, causal, level many times, but I've never thought about it that time in that perspective. So when we reside mentally in frequency base, I guess is the best way to say it, there's a language problem. That's the level where we create. In fact, my next question was, in your book you talk about how we construct reality. Is that where it is, and when our mind resides there?
We're actually it's a partnership. And so, like, you might think, like, does a photon construct its reality and decide which of the little gateways that it passes through? Does it decide if it's going to be a particle or a little wave? Well, it's a joint decision, you know, based on if someone's observing, actually. So there's a level of where we are all part of the same thing, and on that level, we're creating it together all the time. So that's getting to that lucid living, that state of we are all one, that we're on that level. There is kind of this free choice, of course, but it's also this predestination, if you want to call it that, because we've already made the choices through all time. We've decided we want to experience everything, we being the oneness that is. And so we as consciousness cast out all of these multitudes of realities and possibilities just to explore what does it all feel like. And that experience of being is what sweeps us along. And in the process of all this, we tend to forget who we really are. And so just to be human is to have accepted to play that role of not remembering what it is that we came here to do, not really being totally clear at all times on who we are.
Sorry about that.
And forgetting how that we're related to everyone, and we agreed to be in partnership in all these different ways.
So do we have complete free will to change our reality? Or can we change it? Or are we stuck
at
what
the
we
level
got
of oneness? Yeah, we do, but when you're able to do that, then you're not who you are right now anymore. So that's like kind of like a catch-22. So you can totally change anything, but the only way you can change anything is to be becoming one again with everything. And at that level, it's like, you know, when you're driving a car and you've got the clutch pedal and you use that to go between the gears. If you think of each reality as one of the gears, first gear, second gear, third gear, when you hit the clutch pedal, you're going back to the oneness and you're going between gears. You're going to that state where everything is possible. And in that state where everything's possible, then you have free choice. But when you come back out, then you're back locked into something. So it's when you're in that state of awareness, where you're connected with everything, then you've got all free choice available to you. It's like saying that you are God, but without the confusion that you are the God that's running everything. It's just that you have the essence of that divine spirit, the divine force that creates all, and that is the place where all the miracles would happen, where all of the shifts in reality occur, where you can actually select between any of the realities. And then when you come into a particular reality, you are no longer in that exalted state experience. That's why we have epiphanies, and that's why shamans and healers go into a state of what they might call no when and nowhere. They go to a place which is all, where time is like it is all happening at once, and all the realities are available at once. It's also very much a common experience of near-death experiencers. Like Anita Murjani writes about in Dying to Be Me, when she describes how she had cancer and nearly died, and then she goes to a place where she had no fear and everything seemed possible. Well, that's what she's describing, is that same feeling that the shamans that I've met, that's exactly where they go when they're doing a miraculous healing to affect a huge dramatic change on somebody. It's necessary to go to that place that's very different than the regular level of consciousness that we normally inhabit.
Can you describe it so people can understand?
Yeah, well, people listening might think, well, that sounds extreme. I don't want to have to die to get to that, and that's a good, valid point, you know, because that's pretty extreme. So for people who have gone through a near-death experience, they do know what I'm talking about. They've been there. For other people, they're thinking, well, what does a shaman do? That's outside my realm of experience. A shaman is essentially someone who works with levels of consciousness to affect changes in the physical world. And what they'll do is they'll enter a trance state. So they might use drumming, for example. They might use chanting. They might use dance, or a combination of these things. Some shamans that I've met work with those things, but they also work with breath, movement, and visualization, which is the essence of what's called in Chinese qigong. But actually, it's not just a Chinese practice. All the shamans that I've ever met through many cultures practice qigong, and those three components are the main ones. It's breath, movement, and visualization. And the visualization is extremely important. That's that level of consciousness. And the shamans that I've met are meditation masters, so they're intimately familiar with Ken Wilber's, you know, these different stages of mindfulness that Ken talks about, although they might not know about Ken Wilber or the name of his book or know which of these are which, but they'll know what it feels like when they get to that nature mysticism place where they are the mountain. They'll know they just need to go up a couple levels from that, and then they can start making changes. And when they are the mountain, they can shake like the mountain and affect earthquakes, for example. Or they can be one with their client and change their client so that if a little boy was having epileptic seizures, then they can go inside that experience and be one with that little boy and then just come out of the experience, that trance state, with a little boy no longer being a victim of the epileptic seizures anymore, that he's now in some new reality where he doesn't get those seizures, but he might have the trance states, because a lot of these shamans would say that someone who's got epileptic seizures is actually on his way to being a shaman, and most shamans start out as wounded healers. You know, they often have near-death experiences and things that take them right to this edge of consciousness.
Do you believe that... And I'm not going to keep you on this all that long. Do you believe that, well, how do I say this? My experience that I had, I was walking around in the world one day, and I had absolutely zero interest in any of this that we're talking about, in metaphysics and consciousness and in humanitarianism. And I blinked my eyes, and suddenly I was. Where did that come from? How did that happen? Is that something that can be made to happen? I didn't make it happen to me, I know that for sure. But is it something that somebody else can make happen, or is it something that just happens, you know, in various ways, different ways to different people? Does that make sense?
Not sure. It makes sense. And in your particular case, I feel like on some level, even though you think that you didn't have any say in it, I get the intuitive feeling that you did, that there was something that you felt was kind of missing, that you felt like that there'd been sort of a gap, like you weren't fully experiencing something. Maybe you didn't wish for this, but I think that
I think obviously that has to be true, but you know, yeah. One of the things that people always ask was, how do I have a mystical experience? Heck, I don't know, it just happened.
Right.
So, but by doing meditation and opening yourself up, you talk about lucid dreaming, and you say one thing, allow reality to shift. I didn't even know that it was there to allow to shift. So what could you tell somebody about allowing it to happen? How can they recognize it and allow it to happen?
Yeah, this is really a wonderful question. And that process of allowing is something a lot of people, they don't realize that their very own beliefs can be so rigid that they're blocking out a lot of experience. That's why when the book starts, it starts off with belief structures, which might seem like a strange way to start the whole book, but it's so important because we often have no clue that we are the ones that are blocking quite a bit of our experience of the world from ourselves. It's not that someone's doing this to us. We're doing it to ourselves, and we do it without recognizing it usually. We know the phrase collective consciousness. We're familiar with that. We're familiar with words like groupthink, and we're familiar with lemmings, and you know, lots of things we can see. Like, okay, so people can easily get swept along with a crowd, and we often don't pay attention to what we're thinking. We just sort of join with the same mindset around us. And I don't know if you're familiar with Gurdjieff, but Gurdjieff said that most of us are just like, we're just walking around in a state of, you know, being pretty much asleep at the wheel. You know, that we're just in a trance state most of the time, and that is really true. So to come out of that trance state, that's the awakening. That would be that moment when suddenly you went from not being humanitarian to suddenly caring, not being interested in metaphysics, to suddenly being very interested. What triggers it? I do believe it's a sense of restlessness, that there's a longing inside the person to experience more. Maybe a feeling that everything's a bit worthless, that there's no point, and there's got to be more to life than this. So I think those are the kinds of things that usually trigger this sort of an experience. As far as when it happens and what causes it, what precipitates it, I don't know. I mean, it could be all sorts of things, but meditation definitely does help lay the groundwork for it. And allowing is another way to say allowing is just getting into the new habit, creating a new habit to just accept what is, and to be aware of what's here right now, instead of being afraid of something that's going to happen or you think it's going to happen, or being all upset about something that already did happen. You know, because humans, we tend to get, we get ourselves out of time quite a bit. We get all mixed, tangled up in the past and the future. And then we miss out on the grand experience that is the miracle of just being alive right here, right now. So that is the key to getting into that allowing.
And I know I'm asking a redundant question, but I can't help it because I happen to know somebody who's doing this. I can see it. They're like, in a kind of in a dark night of the soul, but on the brink of a shift. Right there on the edge. You know, there are like 10 things that start happening when you start going through a dark night, when you start getting to a shift. Relationships fall away. You have this huge void in your life. You don't know what it is. You know, nothing's worth living. Sickness, you know, cancers come and go, or whatever, illness comes and go, depression. How do you tell somebody, hey, you're on a cusp of a shift, and get them to understand you?
Right. Well, when you're talking to someone like that, I think of it like trying to calm someone down who's out in the ocean in the middle of a storm, and they're in choppy waters just clinging to some flotsam and jetsam, and you're shouting from the shore. They can barely hear you as it is, and you're telling them, you know, it's going to be all right.
I mean,
they might see you, but it's hard for them to hear it, hard for them to process it, because when they're in the midst of all that, it's just really, I think the best thing to do is just be with them and be there, be observing and be compassionate and let them know I am here. I think your presence is the most important thing, even if it doesn't seem to register fully, because it is like a drowning person. It is like someone who's feeling totally lost at that point.
And yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I think that experience, it's hard for them to even feel like anyone possibly could understand it. Even if you try to say, I've been through that, they're not going to believe you, because they don't see you right by their side right there, right then. And they look at you on the safety of the shore, and they, you know, even if you assure them, I have been through that, it doesn't mean anything to them in that moment.
So you said about 15 minutes. Talk about anything that you want to talk about, because there's a whole lot more than your book and just things we've talked about.
Oh, right. Well, to me, thank you for that offer. To me, the big point of the whole book, and we've touched on so much of it, is just that something extraordinary is really going on with reality. And the more we pay attention to it, the more amazing and mind-boggling it really gets. And what I mean by that is that the kind of things we think of as just being pure quantum behavior, like quantum tunneling, quantum entanglement, quantum teleportation, what if those little things could happen with your gym shoes or with your money or just with everything in your life? And that's really what this book, Reality Shifts, gets into, because in my experience, these things do happen on the macro scale, and not just a little bit, but all the time, and in a very orchestrated way that often brings people together and helps to bring a person into a life of increased meaning and relevance, and as you were saying, with an increased sense of purposefulness in one's life. I think it all does go together. And
I'm so glad to hear you tell it about the things popping in and out. So I just remembered another story, and I want to just tell this so that people believe it. Of course, they might think I'm crazy, too. That's all right if they did, but it's just another thing to reinforce what you say. About 6 or 7 years, probably about 7 years ago, I have short hair, and I cut my own hair because it's kind of curly, and nobody can make me happy because I'm OCD. And I use these thinning shears because my hair is really thick, to thin it out when I get through cutting it. And I lost these scissors, and I had been looking for these scissors for like 6 months. So one day, and it's when I was writing my book, Agape, and I'm since I'm OCD, my desk is like always in perfect shape. I know where everything is. There's no papers scattered around or anything. And I was working, typing on that book. And I got up, and the kids were at school. It was probably about 10 o'clock in the morning. Nobody's there. And I made a decision. I was going to find those scissors. And I started, you know, racking for my house. And I went and got a cup of coffee and got frustrated and gave up. And I went down and went back and sat down at my desk, and there they were. You know, where did they come from? You know, I'd been sitting at that desk working on that book for 6 months, and my desk was spotless clear. Where did they come from?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Except I want people to know that it really happened.
Oh, yeah. And I know when I'm talking about these things, it can sound unreal, like that can't be true. But I just want people to suspend their disbelief and allow for that possibility, because that is the number one way to have reality shifts appear for you, you know, that really does make a big difference. And it can be a wonderful thing. I think sometimes people are a little bit worried that if you allow yourself to experience things outside of the status quo or the collective consciousness, that there could be a problem. You know, there could be something happen that's bad or unpleasant. But I have not experienced unpleasant reality shifts, and I really keep a focus on... What?
I haven't experienced anything that's unpleasant, but I do know some people who have. But it's people
right.
who are fear-based anyway. Like, for example,
well, yeah, exactly. Now, yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because that is a good example. And so, and I should back up and qualify what I'm saying, because I do know people who have things just fall off shelves, and that could be at the store or in their house, and it's kind of unpleasant when it's in the store because things can break, even though you didn't touch it. you know, little China figurines can jump off a shelf and you were nowhere near it, but then how do you explain that? But it can happen in people's homes, and it happens when they're going through a great deal of psychic stress and they're not grounded, they're not meditating. So I believe it's really important for people to experience good reality shifts by staying energized through meditation and good food, exercising, breathing deeply, and then practicing the reversal of negative self-talk, which I do cover in the book Reality Shifts. But basically, it's just pay attention to what you're thinking. And if you're thinking things that are kind of on a downward spiral, try out the opposite. Even if you don't believe it, just say those things anyway. Like if you think, oh, everything I do goes to bad, then just for kicks, say, everything I do always goes right. And make sure you interject that frequently, because it's like an antibody to the virus that you've got with the other thought stream.
And that makes just so much. We have about 8 to 10 more minutes. Why don't you talk about shifting reality for healing? What do you mean by that, and what is there to shift? Where's the button that you push?
Right. Well, healing is a good question, and it's sort of a broad subject. I've had a number of amazing, beautiful, what I would call miraculous healing experiences for myself and for those that I love that have happened real time. To give you just one example, I've noticed that when I would put my hand over injuries, sometimes I could get an instant recovery. I could just feel energy flowing and feel a lot better. And I think people listening even remember, like if you've had a cold and then suddenly there's that moment where you just feel like I'm okay. And it's just that feeling of wellness that comes over you.
Yeah.
And it is a reality shift. What's amazing, though, is when we have a reality shift involving a broken bone or an open wound or a broken, just a burn from boiling steam, those sorts of things. And I've also experienced instantaneous healing from those injuries. So, as well as seeing people who had cancer have their cancer go away. And so I do.
Do you have any recommendations for people out there how to do that?
Right.
And now you can't necessarily say, okay, this is what you do, 1, 2, 3, and it's going to happen. But where do they start?
Right. Well, in my book, Reality Shifts, I've got a section that goes through some examples of healing and gives some, I think it's more that I can cover in 8 minutes, but it's basically all about love and about getting yourself out of the way. And when I say getting yourself out of the way, it's those beliefs, again, that can cause quite a bit of trouble for most people. So in order to get to that place of healing, and that's chapter 9 in the book, Shifting Reality for Healing, it's super important that you really ramp up and improve your ability to feel love in your life. And if you're healing for yourself, whether it's for yourself or someone else, but it's the consciousness of love that does the healing, and it's just getting into that state of complete, perfect, unconditional, infinite love, and focusing that's just the key to it, the whole thing. I know it sounds so simple, but that's why, I don't know, it's sometimes the simplest things are the most difficult to explain, like telling someone mm-hmm. who's never, I mean, it's hard to even think how to talk about something, like teaching someone to walk or breathe or swallow, because we do these things so naturally. They're simple, but they're very involved. So for healing, the most important thing is love, so it's important to state that intention. I believe in feeling and tuning into the injury or illness, and then bringing love and light into it, basically. There are lots of classes and modalities for pranic healing, Reiki healing, energy healing of all different kinds, and there's even a healing power of words, believe it or not. But all of these things are accessible to all of us. You don't need to pay thousands of dollars for a class. You can just work with yourself and with your beliefs and with your ability to focus awareness and improve your ability to love to become a healer. And
so when you
your,
talk about
your thoughts
love,
and feelings totally make a difference.
When you talk about love, Cynthia,
yes.
Something someone said to me the other day, how can you love, Eva, unconditionally? Talking about generally humanity, I mean, people are going to piss you off. There's no doubt about that. It's going to happen. But how can you unconditionally love when there's so much hatred and violence in the world? How do you do it? Why do you do it?
Right.
So what do you have to say about that?
Oh, boy. And then we're, oh, my gosh. I think the easiest way for people to get to that experience would be, once again, to have like a Kundalini awakening or near-death experience or the type of transcendental experience you had. So it's, I think the key then is just to wish for it, to say, okay, universe, multiverse, I'd like to know how to love like that. And I'm willing and ready to learn to do that. Help me do that. And the reason they might want to ask for that is to bring healing into their life. If they feel like they've not had a sense of purpose, or like they're just drifting, or like nothing's connected, or things are just going terribly, terribly wrong, all of those, to me, would be necessary and sufficient conditions to say, okay, I'm ready for something new. And even Cynthia talking about agape, that sounds like the way. And that is the key. It is agape I'm talking about. It's that absolute love for everyone and everything that's just flowing with no judgment, with no sense of limiting it. Like, it really does go to everybody. It's a genuine desire to wish the best for everyone.
Perspective, why that's important. And when I mean that, I mean because you're a physicist, and science now says that there is no matter on the quantum level. What does that mean to us in our everyday lives when it comes to how we treat other people?
I think that question answers itself, actually, because anybody listening
can...
I'm just
the woman saying it. You're actually a physicist.
Yes. And when you look at the energy that you would wish most to be running the universe, what kind of a universe would you choose to be in? If you could choose anything, and I believe we are choosing anything, and that energy is actually an emotion, what kind of universe would you wish to vote for and inhabit with your entire being? Where would you want to be? And that's what I mean. The question answers itself just by the virtue of the fact that the one thing that every one of us most craves, most needs, most requires to thrive and exist well in this world is love. It's all about love. That's what we're living for. That's what it's all about. That's what heals. That's what brings people together. That's what it just makes all the difference. Without it, it's just a meaningless life.
So from a physics perspective, because I want people to get this. People don't believe me when I say that there's no matter on the quantum level, and we live in a virtual reality. So what you do to yourself, you're doing to someone else. Is that true?
That is true.
The sense?
That is true. Yeah, because and I know it's hard for people to believe it if they haven't actually conducted quantum physics experiments or witnessed it with their own eyes. But anybody can go out right now and do some research on this. Go on the Internet, look up the Elaine Aspect experiments with the double slits, with the quantum particles. You know, because I know we're running out of time.
And read my new book, Consciousness.
Read that book. Eva, your book is fabulous. And you get to the core of that question, what is consciousness? And with thanks to your dogged questioning and just keeping it so grounded and down to earth, then you keep the focus on a subject that otherwise is so slippery that scientists themselves didn't even notice there was no common language for what they were describing. So thanks to you. This is a groundbreaking book for anybody that doesn't yet have it. I can't recommend it highly enough. That's Consciousness by Eva Herr. It's fabulous.
Thank you. All right, so we got a couple more minutes. Is there anything that you want to talk about that you haven't talked about or even that we have that you want to talk about again? Or if you have a message to the world that you would like to say, if you could say anything that you wanted to say.
Okay, well, I'd love to.
About 4 minutes.
I've got my favorite, my very favorite question. I believe questions are seeds, and when we plant them, things grow. And my favorite question to ask is, how good can it get? I recommend, if people just want to take one thing away from this whole talk today, just take that and ask, how good can it get when you're in a good situation already? Go ahead and see how much better it can get. If things seem like they're going down in a bad direction, ask, how good can it get? You will change everything just by thinking and asking this question. You can think it quietly. You can say it out loud. It's a phenomenal question for just turning things around and raising everything to a much higher level. And it can help bring cohesion and clarity out of chaos. It can bring love out of just the worst situations. And it can bring miracles where you might have thought that there was no rainbow or no hope. So that's definitely what I like to leave people asking and thinking about. It's just my favorite question. How good can it get? And that, and you can turn that on to any aspect of your life. How good can my life get with my family? How good can it get with my job? How good can it get in 2013? Just let your imagination be your guide. Start turning that focus on every area of your life. And then I want to tell people also about my website. That's realityshifters.com. I do have a monthly newsletter, which includes my blog and whatever news items have happened in the last month. I've got a lot of videos at YouTube, and I tweet on Twitter. I've got posts on Facebook. But I think everything can be found right through realityshifters.com, including my email if you'd like to send me a story about a reality shift or a question that you might have.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, how do people email you if they have a question? And where can they find your book?
Oh, excellent. Well, my books are through Amazon.com and also Barnes & Noble. And if people want to get an autographed copy of anything, then definitely go to the shop at realityshifters.com. And I'm very, very happy to autograph books and CDs. I've got a meditation CD, lots of books. And my email is cynthia@realityshifters.com.
Well, thank you so much, Cynthia, Cynthia Sue Larson, for coming on my show tonight and talking about your fabulous book, Reality Shifts, When Consciousness Changes the Physical World. And I want to say that even though Cynthia is a physicist, don't let that scare you away from this book. It's easy to read. It's easy to understand. It's a wonderful book to help move you along your path. And thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week. Have a great week.